Digital exhaust refers to the passive data traces generated through everyday technology use, traces that accumulate without conscious intention and persist long after the interaction that produced them has been forgotten. The term originated in data industry practice. Shoshana Zuboff later reframed these traces as behavioral surplus extracted by platforms within her surveillance capitalism framework. The quantified self movement reframes the same passive traces as raw material for self-knowledge. The difference between these two framings is not merely semantic. It is the difference between data collected about you and data collected by you, which is to say, the difference between surveillance and self-study. And it is this second framing that concerns the present analysis. I have 11,000 AI conversation sessions saved across three platforms: Claude Code, Claude AI, ChatGPT, spanning roughly 8,500 hours of session time, measured by session duration, not active interaction, across pair programming, research, and a mode of interaction that does not yet have a stable name, but resembles thinking out loud with an interlocutor who never tires, never judges, and never forgets what you said 3 months ago. I built a pipeline to parse, embed, cluster, and extract patterns from these conversations with the original intention of mining ideas for blog posts. What the pipeline surfaced was closer to involuntary autobiography. The quantified self movement, which Gary Wolf and Kevin Kelly initiated at Wired in 2007 as a community of users and makers of self-tracking tools interested in self-knowledge through numbers, has historically focused on physiological data, exercise, sleep, food intake, mood, location. The personal informatics research that grew from it proposes a five-stage model: preparation, collection, integration, reflection, action, where the critical transition occurs at the reflection stage, which is the point at which raw data transforms into self-knowledge that can alter behavior. What appears underexplored, and what the present analysis begins to address, is the application of these same methods to conversational data, specifically to the enormous corpus of text that accumulates when a person spends thousands of hours in dialogue with large language models. This corpus is qualitatively different from step counts or sleep logs. It contains not just what you did, but what you thought, what you asked, what you were confused about, and what you returned to repeatedly without noticing the repetition. The pipeline. The architecture is straightforward in principle and tedious in practice. Three data sources feed into a common format: Claude Code sessions exported via the CLI, 80,500 sessions, Claude.ai conversations scraped from browser export, TOM100, and ChatGPT threads from the JSON account dump, 400 sessions. After parsing on turn boundaries, the corpus contains approximately 60,000 chunks. Each chunk is embedded using a 12-layer model that produces 384-dimensional dense vectors trained through weakly supervised contrastive loss on automatically mined text pairs, which means the model learns to push semantically related text closer together in vector space and semantically unrelated text further apart. The choice of this model over larger alternatives, the various iterations of AI's OpenAI's, was pragmatic rather than principled. Preliminary silhouette scores showed no meaningful improvement from larger models, and embeddings are not the bottleneck in this pipeline. The first technical surprise arrived immediately. Cosine similarity in the embedded corpus never drops below 0.71, meaning the maximum cosine distance, defined as 1 minus similarity, reaches only 0.29. This narrow similarity band is a known property of contrastive embedding models. The low info NCE temperature used during training, typically 0.01, combined with the anisotropy problem in transformer embeddings, causes vectors to cluster in a cone rather than distributing across the full hypersphere. Semantically unrelated chunks, debugging a Git merge conflict, researching monetary policy, still share enough neighborhood structure in 384-dimensional space that their distances cluster in a narrow band. This broke initial clustering parameters entirely, as a deep scan epsilon of 0.35, drawn from textbook examples that assume the distance metric uses its full range, placed every chunk in a single cluster. The second surprise was the K-means silhouette score of 0.046, which is to say, structure exists but faintly. Random data produces approximately 0.0. Well-separated clusters approach 1.0. A silhouette score in the range of 0.046 indicates that the boundaries between topics in AI conversations are not sharp but gradual, which aligns with experience. A conversation about database schema design drifts into cash flow forecasting because both involve structured data pipelines, and the embedding model cannot distinguish topical drift from topical identity. The silhouette score's known limitations in high-dimensional spaces, combined with K-means's assumption of spherical clusters that struggles with the non-linearly separable data characteristic of text embeddings, confirmed that K-means was the wrong tool. DBSCAN, which does not require specifying the number of clusters and which handles variable density and noise natively, produced cleaner results with a tuned epsilon of 0.07, 340 clusters from the 60,000 embedded chunks, with 43,800 chunks classified as noise, 73% noise. At this epsilon, varying epsilon between 0.05 and 0.110 shifts the noise percentage substantially. The number is an artifact of the parameter, not a fixed property of the data. What 73% noise means? The noise classification deserves scrutiny before it is accepted at face value, because what constitutes noise depends entirely on the research question, and a different question would reclassify much of it as signal. In this analysis, noise means chunks that do not cluster with any thematic group at the specified density threshold, which in practice means warm-up exchanges, let's work on the authentication flow, boilerplate scaffolding, read the config file, here's what I found, incremental debugging loops, try this, didn't work, try this instead, and context refreshes, here's where we left off last session. All necessary. None thematically distinctive. The counterargument is immediate and worth stating. The broader literature on customer service chat sessions suggests that sentiments conveyed in online conversation are among the most predictive factors of perceived satisfaction, which suggests that the emotional texture of debugging sessions, frustration, relief, confusion, breakthrough, might be more revealing of cognitive patterns than the topical content the pipeline was designed to extract. What I filtered out as noise might be the most honest signal about how I actually work. The pipeline doesn't capture that. It captures what I talk about, not how I feel while talking about it. This limitation is load-bearing. It means the self-knowledge produced by this analysis is necessarily partial, a function not only of the data, but of the technical decisions, embedding model, clustering algorithm, epsilon parameter, that mediate between raw data and interpreted pattern. Research on self-tracking data confirms this. As one analysis in the personal informatics literature observes, data in their pure form offer quite little information, and therefore cannot be interpreted as secured knowledge. Only in combination with the various contextual factors do the naked data get their actual meaning. The gap between self-image and reality. Before running the pipeline, I would have described my AI usage as primarily concerned with software architecture and system design, secondarily with research in economics, game theory, and AI alignment, and lastly, with writing and idea development. The actual distribution, measured by chunk volume across the 27% that clustered, the remaining 73% noise is excluded, debugging and troubleshooting at 34%, Git operations and deployment at 18%, TypeScript and React implementation at 16%, research at 9%, writing at 4%, everything else at 19%. I am not the person I thought I was. Or more precisely, the trace I leave in conversation with AI reveals what I actually spend time on, which diverges substantially from what I value, remember, or identify with. Debugging is forgettable. Research is memorable. Memory distorts self-image toward the activities that feel significant rather than the activities that consume time. And this distortion is invisible until you count chunks. The personal informatics literature documents across the stages of the Lee, Day, and Forlitzi model a persistent gap between self-report and measurement. Individuals systematically misjudge their own behavior until confronted with data, at which point the discrepancy between what they believed and what the numbers show becomes a site for genuine learning. What makes AI conversation data unusual as a measurement instrument is its granularity. A fitness tracker tells you that you walked 4,000 steps. A conversation log tells you that you spent 40 minutes asking increasingly frustrated questions about ESLint configuration, which tells you something about your tolerance for tooling friction, your debugging strategy, exhaustive rather than strategic, and your relationship to the tool itself, adversarial, if the language of the prompts is any indication. The authorship problem. Cluster number 103 contains 12 chunks across 5 sessions spanning 4 months, all concerning emergent behavior in agent simulations. Tracing the genealogy of a single sentence, emergent behavior is an attribution error, the system isn't doing anything, we're pattern matching our own teleology, reveals a collaborative process that resists clean attribution. Session 1 was a textbook question about MESA triggering in SugarScape models. Session 2 was a design conversation about multi-agent economic simulations, where Claude proposed the Nash equilibrium angle, and I proposed the spatial topology constraint, and we converged on a framing neither of us started with. Session 3 produced the phrase, locally rational, globally emergent, through iterative refinement. Session 4 introduced the risk of treating emergent patterns as intentional design. Session 5 produced the sentence, who authored it? The core difficulty is that human AI content creation introduces complexities in attribution that traditional frameworks cannot fully address. Because the author's input guides the creative process, while the model also shapes the direction and framing of the output, and the boundary between guidance and generation blurs over the course of a long conversation. The U.S. Copyright Office's 2025 Copyrightability Report requires human authorship and sufficient human control over the expressive elements of a work, a standard that assumes a cleaner separation between author and tool than conversational AI permits. I ran a manual audit of the 10 most coherent idea clusters. 8 were clearly mine in the sense that I introduced the topic, directed the exploration, and would have arrived at approximately the same conclusions without AI assistance, though not as quickly and not with the same supporting evidence. 1 was a synthesis of Julian Jaynes's bicameral mind hypothesis that I would not have connected to the topic under discussion without Claude's intervention. 1 was genuinely ambiguous, a case where the direction of the conversation shifted after an AI response in a way that produced an insight neither participant would have reached independently. The reassuring reading, 80% of the ideas I audited were still mine in any meaningful sense. The unsettling reading, it took a computational pipeline to surface these clusters and a manual audit to confirm that, which means the authorship question is no longer self-evident. Human collaboration produces the same kind of convergent thinking, but at seminar scale, not at the scale of thousands of hours of daily interaction where the interlocutor's contributions are indistinguishable in form from your own prose, and where the sheer volume makes manual provenance tracking impossible. When ideas emerge through 50-turn dialogues, the provenance becomes a research question rather than an intuition. What I mean by my ideas has shifted from ideas I generated to ideas I have custody of, ideas I am responsible for articulating and defending, regardless of whether I originated them in isolation. The uncomfortable clusters. The clusters I expected to find, software engineering patterns, research domains, project planning, were present and unsurprising. The clusters I did not expect emerged from the small end of the size distribution, groups of 3 to 15 chunks, scattered across months, united by a thematic thread I had not consciously recognized. Cluster number 47. 8 chunks, 5 sessions, 3 months. Conversations where I justify a technical choice I have already made emotionally. The language is consistent across all instances, trade-offs, pragmatic, good enough for now, and the subtext, visible only in aggregate, is anxiety about whether I am solving the right problem. I did not set out to have that conversation 8 times. I did not notice the repetition until the clustering surfaced it. Cluster number 204, 6 chunks, various contexts, variations on the question, how do I know if I'm solving the right problem? The projects change, the stakes change, the phrasing changes, the anxiety is identical. This is the part that the pipeline was not designed to surface, but which constitutes its most genuinely useful output. The clusters aggregate behavior without deference to self-narrative. They reveal that I invoke pragmatic trade-offs when avoiding hard decisions, that I request alternative perspectives when I have already decided and want validation, that a quick review is code for anxiety about quality. The broader literature on longitudinal text analysis suggests that a historical timeline of a person's writing can reflect an overall attitude toward life, and that time-varying analysis can identify behavioral patterns invisible to the individual producing them. The meta layer and the privacy paradox. This post was extracted from the pipeline it describes. Idea seed number 012. What does your chat history reveal about how you think? Writing it required rerunning the analysis, which changed the corpus, because this session is now part of the dataset. The embeddings for this paragraph will cluster near other chunks about self-knowledge and recursive self-modeling, and if I mine the next batch of blog post ideas, this post will be a seed for future posts about the same recursive process. The system is eating its own tail. There is a privacy paradox embedded in this methodology that I want to name without resolving. The analysis runs locally on exported data, which means it avoids the corporate surveillance that research has documented extensively, Google retaining Gemini conversations reviewed by human raters for up to 3 years, OpenAI's privacy policy permitting monitoring of conversations and disclosure to authorities under legal, safety, or fraud conditions, Microsoft Copilot deployments having access to more than 3 million files per organization on average. Local analysis is private, but publishing the results of that analysis, as I am doing now, creates a new exposure, a public record of the topics I care about, the patterns in how I think, the anxieties I return to compulsively. The data stays local, the self-knowledge doesn't. The deeper privacy problem is epistemological rather than practical. If my conversations are shaped by AI responses, which they are, as the authorship analysis demonstrates, and my analysis uses AI extraction, which it does, then what I am discovering are patterns in AI-mediated thinking, not patterns in raw human cognition. This is not necessarily a deficiency. It is how I think in this specific environment, one that consumes thousands of hours per year. But it is not neutral self-knowledge. It is self-knowledge filtered through the same system it claims to study. What this actually reveals. The quantified self-movement's founding premise is that measurement enables self-knowledge that self-report cannot provide. In most contexts, exhaust implies waste, a byproduct of production. But in self-tracking, data becomes the means of self-improvement, a catalyst for making a change in ourselves. The pipeline confirms this premise with a qualification that the movement has not adequately addressed. The measurement instrument is not transparent. Every technical choice, which embedding model, what clustering algorithm, what epsilon, what counts as noise, shapes the self-knowledge that emerges, and a different set of choices would produce a different self-portrait from the same raw data. What I know after running this analysis is that I spend most of my AI time on work I do not remember or value, debugging, deployment, boilerplate, that my ideas are more collaborative than I previously acknowledged, that I return to the same anxieties across different projects without recognizing the pattern, and that the gap between who I think I am and what the data shows is large enough to be genuinely disorienting. The pipeline gave me 340 clusters, 50 viable blog post seeds, and an uncomfortably precise record of my own cognitive habits. The uncomfortable finding is not any single cluster. It is the aggregate portrait. A person who talks about pragmatism while avoiding decisions, who seeks validation while performing independence, who spends 34% of his clustered AI time on the work he values least and 4% on the work he claims to care about most. The clusters do not lie. They aggregate. And sometimes the most valuable thing a measurement instrument can do is show you something you have been systematically avoiding looking at, not because it is hidden, but because the resolution required to see it exceeds what unaided memory can provide. I built the pipeline to mine blog post ideas. It worked. This is one of them. The pipeline is also, and more fundamentally, a mirror. Mirrors do not care about your self-narrative.